is take one of a conversation with Mr. Richard Gunn, Cleveland, Ohio, May 7. Mr. Gunn, you say you are from Kansas?
Yes, I'm from Kansas City, Kansas, originally.
How long have you been in Cleveland?
I came to Cleveland in September 1948.
Well, you know the city very well, then.
Yes, in this length of time, I have learned the city quite well.
You've been practicing law ever since they're here?
I took the bar exam in February 1949, and I started practicing in March. On March 21st, 1949, I started practicing law here in Cleveland, Ohio.
So all your professional life has been here?
Yes, all my professional life has been in Cleveland, though I did pass the Kansas bar exam in June 1948.
What is the employment situation here now?
The employment situation in Cleveland is of such nature that there are many Negroes working in the plants in this city. There are many Negroes working in the plants. However, most of them are working in the menial positions within the companies. You find very few Negroes working in the industries here in the top echelon jobs or white-collar categories. You find some Negro secretaries in some of these plants, but by and large, you will find that in the higher echelons and most of the companies, there are no Negroes employed. There are some exceptions, some notable exceptions, such as the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company.
Why that? Why do they do that?
Well, Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company has a very fine hiring policy. They have had a very fine policy of upgrading Negroes. Recently, there was a young Negro fellow, Carl Chancellor, who was upgraded to the position of assistant chief attorney in one of the sections. And this was a first with the Illuminating Company. You have another young Negro fellow who has a fairly high position with the Illuminating Company. And there are some others in the lower echelons in the company. At Ohio Bell Telephone, you have a Negro who is one of the supervisors down there, Lowell Henry, who was formerly in the city council of the city of Cleveland. And you have several girls in the supervisory categories on the lower level, in the operating level. And as far as most of the companies, you cannot point to them with the same type of record as you do at the Ohio Bell Telephone Company and at CEI, Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company.
How much Negro-owned business is there here?
Well, we have in Cleveland quite a few Negro-owned businesses. I was formerly the president of the Cleveland Business League, an organization basically comprised of Negroes in business, in the professions, and in the various trade categories. And we have, at this time, I'm quite sure, we had a study made about 5 or 6 years ago. There are over 2,000 Negro businesses and professional men and tradesmen in the city of Cleveland. Many of these businesses are marginal businesses. Some of the businesses are rather substantial. We have the Creighton Sausage Company. Mr. Creighton died last year, but he left a substantial business here in the sausage manufacturing field. We also have Couch's Sausage, and this is a young man who has a good business going. We also have a Savings and Loan Association here, Quincy Savings and Loan. I think they have assets of close to $6 million. This is a Negro-owned and operated business, though there are some white stockholders. They are in a minority. Then you have the Dunbar Division of Supreme Life Insurance Company. They're operating here. Of course, Supreme bought out the stock in the Dunbar Life Insurance Company, a company started here in Ohio. And as far as the large Negro businesses, you don't have the large, substantial businesses that we should have in the community. However, we do have several Negro insurance agencies, whereas 10 years ago, you did not have one Negro insurance agency because Negroes were unable to obtain agencies in the city. My law partner is a lawyer, but he devotes most of his time to the general insurance field. And he has been in this field for 10 years. And he often belabors the fact that he wished that he had started in the insurance business much earlier. But unfortunately, he was unable to start in the field until in the early part of the 50s because no Negro was able to get an agency.
I was talking with Adam Clayton Powell the other day, and one of the first things he said was, the old organizations, the old leadership is finished. They are through. How does that strike you?
Well, I would like to state that I may share his opinion partially that they may be through. I don't think that there is any reason for this other than the fact that they are old. And as you know, when you have labored in the vineyards of civil rights and other organizations for many, many years, you tire of this. And when you reach a certain age, you just do not have the vim, vigor, and vitality that you formerly had. Now,
what about CORE?
CORE, you mean the
organization?
Yeah. No, this is a young people's organization. But I think that CORE typifies.
He said the same thing about CORE and about SNCC, all together, all big five organizations.
He said, what did he say about them?
They're all together. They are not significant anymore.
They're not significant.
Well, so he says.
I think Adam Clayton Powell is somewhat wrong in this approach and in this statement. However, we did have a situation to develop here in Cleveland within the last 3 weeks when the movement in Cleveland got to the point there where there were demonstrations several weeks ago. One of the largest dailies in the state, which is situated here in Cleveland, wrote an editorial asking, where are the Negro leaders, the responsible Negro leaders? And they proceeded to name these responsible Negro leaders in their editorial. It just so happened that most of the names of the individuals named were the traditional Negro leaders that have been looked upon by the white community as leaders in this community.
You mean locally?
Locally,
yes.
Locally. And they felt that the responsible Negro leaders would come out and object and not agree with the techniques being used by the younger fellows. I guess I could be considered one of the younger fellows in this movement in Cleveland. But we did have a meeting. These so-called Negro leaders called a meeting. 25 of them, about 30 of them gathered at the YMCA. And these were your traditional Negro leaders. Some of them were judges. There were two judges there, and others who have been on the scene for years. It just so happened that a few of us younger fellows were included in this meeting. And as a result of that meeting, we discussed the school boycott that was to take place in the city of Cleveland. And of course, the newspapers were opposed to the school boycott. And we discussed other things. But as a result of this meeting, all of these leaders, if they were to be called leaders, and I'm not a leader, but I was at the meeting, but we all agreed that evening that the school boycott was a good thing. We went on record as approving and endorsing the school boycott. We went on record as approving and endorsing the program of the United Freedom Movement, which I imagine you've heard of in Cleveland. And this release was released to the newspaper. And all these men, with the exception of one, assented to the fact that their names could be included in the news release. And, of course, I'm quite sure this dispelled any thinking on the part of the white community that the so-called responsible Negro leaders, who were the older leaders, were not behind the United Freedom Movement. It pointed out to them that we were all together, including the traditional Negro leadership in the past. We all joined hands together, and they were solidly behind the entire movement here in Cleveland.
Well, that would not be true in New York, of course.
Well, I don't...
CORE jerking the charter, you see, or suspending the two chapters in New York, Brooklyn and the New York chapter, and the whole struggle with, about the boycott there.
Yes. I know the NAACP pulled out of the second boycott in New York City.
And CORE and the NAACP both did.
A corporal out of the second squad.
The memory's tricking me. And they suspended Brunson's outfit.
I know they suspended Brunson's group.
Now, this, there's anything but unity in a situation like that.
That's true. Very true.
Now, what is the moral of that story?
You mean in New York City?
Yes.
Well, I think that this was probably the result of the organizations in New York wanting to withdraw and not be associated with the more radical movement developing in the Brooklyn chapter of CORE. I think that the NAACP withheld support from the second school boycott in New York because they felt that this was an irresponsible move. But I understand from very good sources in New York City that the NAACP is now unhappy and they feel that they were wrong in not supporting the second school boycott in New York City, because the second school boycott was not a success. Another typical example of this is what happened in my hometown, Kansas City. Kansas City had a school boycott the same day we had a school boycott here in Cleveland, Ohio. In Cleveland, Ohio, between 92 and 95% of all Negroes in the city of Cleveland stayed out of school that day, about 65,000 children. In Kansas City, the NAACP withheld their support from the school boycott, and there were only about 40% of the children who stayed home from school in Kansas City, Kansas, on the same day we had our school boycott here. I feel that the fragmenting of the efforts by the withholding of support by the NAACP minimized the effectiveness of the school boycott in Kansas City. Whereas in Cleveland, all of the so-called Negro leaders were behind the movement, the boycott. The NAACP was in support of the boycott. CORE, freedom fighters, and all the civil rights in this community, including many white organizations, supported the school boycott in Cleveland. And it was almost 100% successful in this city last month.
If the matter of unity may or may not carry a price tag with it, of course, from one case to another. That is, take the, without enough information about the boycott, say, in New York, except on this point, Galamison said if his schedule for integration was not kept, he would rather see the school system wrecked. This is on record. That the school, public schools may have served their purpose anyway, he said. Now, this position, you see, well, say that, that raises some other questions. Unity may be too high a price to pay for that. It might be.
Oh, I agree that unity would be too high a price to pay under the circumstances which you just related to me. I did not know that Galamison had made the statement.
He made it, yes.
That he would rather see the school system wrecked
than not
maintain a schedule which he felt was satisfactory integration. I feel there is a point where you can reach where it's just not tenable.
But unity is not the only consideration.
No. There must be unity with a purpose, and a worthwhile purpose. Now, of course, here in Cleveland, we felt that the school boycott, a one-day boycott, would serve a worthwhile purpose to dramatize to the entire community, to the nation, to the world, how our children are being treated in Cleveland. However, suppose this had been a decision to have a boycott for 2 months, then I dare say we would not have had the unity even in Cleveland with such a movement as a 2-month school boycott.
The question of integration is not the only issue with you here, is it?
Integration?
Quality as well.
No, the real problem is quality education. And I feel that some people do not understand what we mean when we say quality education. I don't know whether you know it or not, but the Cleveland Board of Education, as a result of the United Freedom Movement's presentation last fall, appointed a Citizens Council on Human Relations, excuse me, to study the school system and to bring forth some recommendations to eradicate discrimination and various other things existing in the school system, to bring forth recommendations for an in-service training program for teachers, to bring forth recommendations as to how we can bring about greater pupil contact between groups of different racial and ethnic backgrounds, to bring back recommendations as to how we can help the educationally deprived child, and then to bring back recommendations as to how we can effectively integrate the Cleveland school system, taking into consideration all the rights and privileges of everyone in the city. This committee had 16 members, five of which were Negroes, and I was appointed to this committee, even though I was active in a civil rights organization. I was the only Negro who was appointed to the committee who was active in civil rights organizations and in the United Freedom Movement. The only other person appointed to the committee who had an axe to grind or who was affiliated with some other type movement was a young white fellow from the Collinwood area, which is an area where Negro children are being bussed in as a result of overcrowded conditions in the Negro areas. Now, this committee met for a period of 4 months approximately, from November 20th until March 31st. We found, for instance, that there were schools on the west side that were predominantly white, or all white. One instance, there was one junior high school that only had one Negro child in the junior high school. But at this school, for instance, the pupil turnover between September of last year and January of this year was about a 50% turnover in pupils. Then we found that at this particular school, there was no parent-teachers association. The parents weren't interested in enough to have a PTA. We found that there was a high absentee rate, a high tardyism rate. We found also that at this school, the principal related that half of the children graduating from this junior high school were not ready to enter high school. Now, this was a school where there was only one Negro child. There were 900 white or more white children there. There were only two Negro teachers in this school. So this is the type of quality education that they're getting on the west side. Now, another example of the quality of education we're getting here in Cleveland for all children is the fact that week before last, they announced the winners of the National Merit Scholarship examinations. And these examinations are given all over the country. And in the greater Cleveland, we had several scholarship winners. In the city of Cleveland, which has over 150,000 children in the school system, which is more than double the next largest community in this county, there was only one child to win a scholarship in Cleveland. Whether it's important or not, the one child was a Negro girl. Not one white child in Cleveland won a scholarship. Now, where we are now, I live here in Shaker Heights.
Yeah.
This is a rather small suburb. And this is a suburb where there aren't too many children. There are not nearly as many as you have in Cleveland. But they had about at least two scholarship winners in this small suburb. In University Heights, another suburb just east of Cleveland, you had one or two or three scholarship winners in that small suburb. But in the city of Cleveland, you only had one out of all the thousands of children in the city to win a scholarship.
Yes, that makes the point.
This, to me, speaks more clearly than anything I can say as to the quality of education all children are getting in the city of Cleveland. We do not have libraries in our elementary schools in Cleveland. And Congressman Green, when she was here about 2 weeks ago, deplored the fact that in a city of this size and magnitude, they have no libraries in the elementary schools. This is ridiculous. So really, as we complain about integration, we're also complaining about a lack of quality education in this community of Cleveland.
Do you have children?
No, we have no children, unfortunately. But I have clients who have children.
Sure, sure.
I don't want to say that I'm being selfish about this, because I did come up through a segregated school system in Kansas. And I know the ills that can be derived from having a segregated education. I know how difficult it was when I went to the University of Kansas. And for the first time in my life,
Lawrence,
Kansas, I was thrown into contact with white students. I had been an honor roll student in Kansas City, Kansas, in the segregated school system. I was on the Honor Society. And I did not have to study too hard because all the Negroes in the community went to this one school, Sumner High School. And when I graduated from high school, there were only about 160 children graduating. So you can see how limited my competition was. So when I was thrown into competition with children from all over the state of Kansas, all over this country, and foreign students from all over the world, for the first time in my life, I learned that I had to study. And I had to work a little harder to keep up. And I never was able to make the honor society or honor roll in college because I did not have the background I felt I needed to compete on an equal basis with these other children because they were taking courses in high school that we didn't even have in my high school. And this is what we're fighting for in Cleveland. And I know this, that if a child does not have a good education, he cannot come out and get a good job.
Have you been following this HAWU program in Harlem, in the papers?
Which program is that?
HAWU, H-A-Y-Y-O-U.
Community Action for Youth that's under the federal program for delinquent children?
Dr. Kenneth Clark
I'm
familiar with it.
We have one here in Cleveland similar to the one in Harlem called CAY in Cleveland, Community Action for Youth.
Has that been effective?
Well, I hesitate to say they've had a very difficult time getting it off the ground because of many petty jealousies existing at the top. We had the assistant director who resigned. He was the man that did all the legwork to get the money for the program in Cleveland.
How much money was involved in it here?
Let me see. I think it's about $10 million or something like that.
Something substantial.
Yes, it's a very substantial sum. And it's a temporary program. They've had a difficult time hiring staff. They're just getting the staff completed because a lot of people are fearful of coming to this city for this temporary program. It's only guaranteed for 3 years. And I have several friends working in the program. The work that they are doing is a very excellent job, but they've had difficulty getting it off the ground.
Well, apparently the other has an enormous financial background. Couple hundred million apparently is site for it.
In Harlem? I said. Now, we may have more than $10 million allocated to it because I have not been active in the program, and there are others who know much more about the Community Action for Youth than I know about it.
What I was getting at is this.
In fact, they just bought a boy from New York to head this one,
yes.
A 36-year-old Negro fellow to head the program here in Cleveland.
What I'm getting at is this. Dr. Clark has, in recent years, changed his views that he had some years ago, not too many years ago, and some others who are responsible thoughtful people in the New York system, associated with the New York system of schools, interested in it, have changed their position, modified, not in saying, not integration, but in saying that this is now, it's become secondary for the drive for immediate crash program in education. And as other words, integration not as the watchword, but integration is something to be achieved, but immediately move on the quality program.
Upgrading the quality of education.
Immediately.
I've heard that Dr. Clark has somewhat shifted position.
He has shifted position on that.
Yes.
And a lot of other people have too in the last year, as far as I can make out. This leads me to something that Oscar Handlin had in his recent book, Bell in the Night, that his desires and his prescriptions are, I think, would satisfy most people. That is, he is for an integrated society, for an integrated school system. Not in question, no equivocation. The question of how you arrive at this. He wants to emphasize equality as the means rather than integration as the solution. Equality as the means by all legal aspects and all. Not merely civil rights, but all is possible, not but integration has been a difficult thing to achieve in certain practical ways immediately, and to emphasize the approach of the quality rather than the other.
Well, I agree.
Please.
Well, I agree that integration in itself should not be the total end. But in Cleveland, for instance, it will be very difficult to integrate all the children in the city of Cleveland. In fact, there are more Negro children in the city of Cleveland than there are white children in the the school system.
There's our problem right there.
So there's a problem. And not only that, but Cleveland is peculiarly set up physically in that we have a river running down between the east side and the west side of Cleveland. And most of the people living on the west side of Cleveland are white. And I understand about close to 85 or 90% of the Negro children live east of the river on the east side. So right there you have a somewhat more difficult physical barrier toward integration than in most cities. But on the other hand, we're not asking for 100% integration of the school system. We're not asking, for instance, to have children bust across the city, massive reverse busing is what it's called. We're only asking to achieve maximum integration under the situation in Cleveland. But in addition to that, we want to upgrade the quality of education. There are many areas where integration can be achieved, and we want them to do the things necessary
now
to integrate.
Your situation, as far as I can make out, is somewhat distorted or given incomplete coverage in the national press.
That's true.
Of course, as far as I can make out.
Well, in the national press, but even in the local press, we don't get the proper coverage of the problem here in Cleveland. The local press does not paint a very good picture of the civil rights movement in Cleveland. At every opportunity, they attempt to more or less miscolor the situation and to confuse the citizens. I've had many white citizens that I have talked to, many groups, and they ask, why could not you have gotten this in the newspaper? Why could they not explain the situation the way you have explained it? And I indicate to them that we don't run the newspapers. We give them releases, we give them statements, they will not print them. So we really don't get a good dissemination of the facts even in Cleveland, not just in the national press, but even locally. So this is one of the great problems we have in this city. People just don't know. There are so many things that are wrong with the city of Cleveland's educational system and other things going on here that you just cannot get a favorable press. For example, the press went on, and when I say the press, I'm speaking about both newspapers, since one of them is called the press. The newspapers in Cleveland would lead the people to believe, as a result of the Supreme Court of the United States not deciding to hear the Gary Indiana case, that the Supreme Court of the United States has pronounced that the neighborhood school is the law of the land and they will do nothing to disturb the concept of the neighborhood school. And the United States Supreme Court said nothing of the kind. They only refused to hear the case. This does not make a conclusive finding that the neighborhood school is sacrosanct. Now, on the other hand, we didn't read anything, to my knowledge, in the Cleveland paper about the Manhasset, New York decision, where the federal court decreed that they should integrate the school system and that the Board of Education was within its rights to take affirmative steps to integrate the school system and to eradicate de facto segregation. In the New York Times, Tuesday of this week, day before yesterday, they had an article in the New York Times about the Supreme Court decision. And they went on to amplify what it meant. And they had a statement in the New York Times attributed to Robert Carter, the chief counsel of the NAACP. And then they also had an article about the Montclair, New Jersey decision that was rendered by the Supreme Court of New Jersey, in which the Supreme Court of New Jersey unanimously decided that Montclair, New Jersey School Board was right in eradicating, completely eliminating an all-Negro junior high school and distributing the Negro children to the other three junior high schools in the city. There was nothing in the Cleveland papers about this decision. Nothing.
This is the end of tape one of the conversation with Mr. Gunn. Proceed on tape two.